This is Avery Bradley of the Boston Celtics. You're listening to BLNS Radio.
This is Luke Harrigarty, and you're listening to BLNS Radio.
Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for the end! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for the end! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it! 8 tenths of a second to go!
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Put out for the end! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
All right, we're going to try this again, folks. Apologies for the technical difficulties. This is, you're listening to CLNS Radio's post-game coverage of the Celtics and the Denver Nuggets tonight. I am your host, Sean Backey. I got to tell you, aside from the issues kicking off the show tonight, if you have fallen off the Celtics bandwagon for one reason or another, okay, we're going to try this again here. Welcome into CLNS Radio's post-game coverage of the Celtics and the Denver Nuggets tonight. I am your host, Sean Backey. A little bit of technical difficulty to kick off the show tonight, of course. But I got to tell you, my first thought on this is if you jumped off the Celtics bandwagon for one reason or another, now's the time to get back on because this team is making a move. The Celtics defeat the Denver Nuggets tonight by a score of 111-103, a game that was not as close as the score has it appear to be. They were up by as many as 22 points at one point in this game. Denver did make a run to make it close at the end and was able to make it look like a closer game than it was, but the Celtics win this one by a score of 111-103. Again, you are listening to CLNS Radio's post-game coverage, Celtics and the Denver Nuggets. I am your host, Sean Backe. Calvin Chamberlain was scheduled to join me tonight. Unfortunately, he has a personal issue that he's taking care of. Hopefully everything's okay out there on the West Coast. And Calvin will be back on a future show very soon. But as is typical with how technology works sometimes, of course, my computer decided to go bluey on me at the absolute worst time as I was beginning to start the show here. So we do have some sponsors that we will be discussing, and of course want to be able to actually break this game down with some statistics. But certainly getting Q to give me a call when we open up the FanDuel call line to 347-215-7771. We'll be taking your calls all the way to the end of the show tonight. And, of course, we are going to have Jared Weiss calling in from the locker room at TD Garden to give us some insight into tonight's game as well. So, again, the Celtics win this one by a score of 111 to 103. Avery Bradley, the high scorer for the Celtics tonight, 27 points overall, had 21 of those in the first quarter on 8 of 13 shooting in the first half, rather. So, you know, as has been typical of Avery Bradley over the last few weeks or even, you know, most of the season, got off to a hot start and then cooled off in the second half, but you know, his defense was there, and certainly all of the 27 points counted towards a victory for the Celtics tonight. Amir Johnson with 13 rebounds to lead the Celtics in rebounding tonight, and a couple guys tied with six assists to lead the team as well. So again, 347-215-7771. The call lines have already begun to form, so we're going to get to the call lines sooner rather than later. Once we open up the FanDuel call lines, certainly we'll be getting all your thoughts on this one as I stall for time and get my computer rebooted to be able to actually broadcast the show properly tonight. So. Bear with me as we continue to get this going here. So one thing I do want to mention before we open up the call as well, you have only two more days to enter the Celtics ticket giveaway. On February 10th, Paul Pierce will return to TD Garden as a member of the Los Angeles Clippers to face the Boston Celtics. And CLNS Radio and TickIQ have teamed up to get you in the building. Simply follow at CLNS Radio on Twitter. That's at CLNS Radio on Twitter. And you'll be entered into a contest to win a pair of tickets. So the contest is underway now, again, by simply following at CLNS Radio on Twitter. We're going to draw at random a winner on the January 31st edition of Celtics Beat. That's coming up this weekend. So make sure you're following at CLNS Radio by this Friday, January 29th. And don't forget, you can purchase tickets to all of your local sports teams as well as concerts and shows by downloading the TickIQ app for your iPhone and Android. And to receive 10% off your first purchase, make sure to use the promo code BOSTON. That's BOSTON when downloading the TickIQ mobile app. Make sure not only that you're following us on Twitter at CLNS Radio, but also on Facebook at facebook.com/CLNSFans. And, of course, you can download the free mobile podcast app for CLNS Radio on iOS and Android. Simply search CLNS Radio in your app marketplace. All right. What we're going to do here in a moment is get back, get to the call lines here, the FanDuel call lines. We'll be taking your calls in a couple minutes to be able to get your thoughts on tonight's game. And also, don't forget that this broadcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're driving, running errands, in the gym, or simply at home relaxing. So for our audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. and browse over 180,000 audio programs. Download the title free and start listening. It's that easy. One audiobook you should definitely consider, and I've done this. We have a frequent CLNS Radio guest, and of course, he's a sports legend, sports beat legend, Bob Ryan. His book, Scribe, is available on audiblepodcast.com. You can get a free trial at audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and download Scribe, narrated by Bob Ryan himself. I listened to this a while back. Fantastic book. So all you need to do to get this book or choose from over 180,000 audio programs is go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and start your free trial today. All right, let's see how our technology is working and see if we might be able to go to a phone call. We're going to go down to the 941. I believe this is Nick. Let's see if we're up and running here with phone calls. Nick, can you hear me?
Becky, what's going on?
Oof. We're off to a rough start, man. I need your help and give me some good insight into tonight's game. Avery Bradley had a good game. Your boy Kelly Olynyk, the man bun himself, had a good game. Amir Johnson had a good game. This team's on a streak, so I'd love to get your insight on this game and obviously how the team's been doing lately, because I think they're on a pretty good streak here. I hope you agree.
Oh, yeah, I think that they've righted the ship, and I'm glad that you finally were able to get your Commodore 64, you know, fired up, your Apple IIe, you know what I'm saying, on your AOL dial-up, you know.
Take
a little while to dial into the show. We have people lined up waiting for the first time in years, and you can't even get off. No, I'm just kidding. It's all right. We were able to bask in the afterglow of a win while you got your ish together. So, but the one name you didn't, I'm just ripping you, man. So, the one name you didn't mention, though, the most important of all, Evan Turner had 14 points. Excellent game, I think.
Your man.
And a lot of those came late. 14 points, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, you know, 2 steals. He had a lot of, you know, pokeaways, a lot of, you know, good plays, I think, late in the game as Denver. I got stuck listening to the Denver broadcast through a completely legal form of watching the game, of course.
Sure.
And
sure.
And some of the other folks that watched on the Facebook group, the Bleed Green Facebook group, were also watching the Denver broadcast, and they were saying, "Boy, the Denver commentators, they're believers, because they started making a little comeback there, got the game, I think, within, you know, 12 points, and all of a sudden, you know, it was a comeback." And it was during that point, I think, that, you know, Evan Turner was, you know, scoring a lot of his buckets. And, you know, as Denver, you know, in the Denver analysts or commentators kept commenting, and I think it was, you know, they were pretty accurate. Every time Denver tried to make a run, the Celtics seemed to come back, you know, right back, you know,
yeah.
And put them right out of it. And a couple of those times, I think Evan Turner was, you know, part of those runs. And I think that he's up and down. I hesitate to call Evan Turner inconsistent, even though his stats may be inconsistent, at least his scoring may be inconsistent, because I think that his role changes every game. I think he basically just does what Brad Stevens, you know, asks him to do. Some games, you know, he gets put in the game, he's given the green light to go and, you know, do what he needs to do on the scoring end. Other games, he's asked kind of to pull back and let, you know, other people take the reins. Clearly tonight was not Isaiah Thomas's night. I don't know what, you know, wasn't even a matter of, you know, poor shooting. It just wasn't even any volume. I guess it was Avery Bradley's turn to, you know, to really take over 27 points. As you mentioned, though, again, he came out early. I think he had more than half of his points, something like 16 points in the first quarter alone. And then through the rest of the game, he kind of just faded out. And this has become a pattern, I think, with A.B. Bradley, where,
yeah,
you know, he comes out the gate, you know, scores, you know, in bunches, and then suddenly he fades away. And I don't think he fades completely out of the game, because he goes from scoring in bunches when, you know, he starts the game and he comes out of the gate, scores. Then he kind of goes into his defensive mode, and then we just don't, you know, hear from him after that. And I've propounded a theory on the show before. I'll condense it and propound it one more time here for you tonight. And it's, I think it has a lot to do with his height. And I'm going to give credit to my man Robert Evans. He's also a amateur analyst on the Bleed Green Forum, and he believes that it's because his height at 6'1" or 6'2", he's constantly having to shoot over players that are on a nightly basis, you know, 2, 3, 4, if not 5 inches taller than he is. And as a result, if you watch him shoot, he's jumping extremely high on his shot, mm-hmm. and he's doing so to get over those outstretched arms. And I think that as the game progresses and he then goes into his, you know, two-way player mode, goes into playing the defense, he's getting down low, you know, his quads, everything is starting to work. I don't think he has the legs, you know what I'm saying, to come in and, you know, the late parts of the game, the later parts of games, and keep hitting those shots the way he hits them early in the games. That's why I've been thinking. There was a point where, you know, he came off the bench, I think, for 3 games, and he did really well coming off the bench. And then Marcus Smart got hurt, and it was kind of like, well, now we, you know, it's not a matter of who's coming off the bench because there's an injury. Obviously, we're going to have to go with who's not injured. But I think that Avery Bradley is probably the guy that would, as well as, you know, the second unit is playing, and I think you don't really want to change it right now. But I think that if you're, you know, you go forward and you do want to make an adjustment, I think that Avery Bradley might be a guy that you might want to consider coming off the bench, just because he doesn't seem to be able to finish his games the same way that he starts. I mean, maybe I'm the only one that did observe that, but it seems to be that seems to be a trend, and that's the only thing that I can think of, that, you know, it's taxing on his legs to have to jump that high to shoot over players that are, you know, a full 6 inches taller than he is sometimes, and then get down low, you know, and harass and hustle and beat up the opposing, you know, team's best backcourt player on a nightly basis.
Yeah, that's a good observation, Nick, and you know, I think there's some merit to that for sure. And obviously, being familiar with Robert myself, I'd say, you know, none of you guys are all that amateurish anymore. But my feeling on it is similar to that. You know, obviously with you know, with the legs, that maybe he's getting a little gassed. But I'm wondering if, with all the effort that he puts in on defense and typically having to defend a good perimeter player. That, you know, as good a shape as he might be in, that might be taxing on him a little bit as well. Maybe a combination of both of those things, but certainly it's not, you know, just a couple of games that we've seen this from Avery Bradley. I mean, this is a trend. So, you know, certainly you can look into it and kind of break it down and give it some good analysis to say, okay, something's, you know, there's something to this. We're not just, you know, making this up, or we're not just, you know, all of us are not crazy to see, you know, I mean, the stats don't lie. So regardless, you know, on a night like tonight, he shoots 11 for 20, has 27 points overall. I think we'll take that all day long. I don't think there was, you know, anything in particular in his game in the second half that was not leading him to have as many points. I mean, he played 39 minutes, right? So, you know, anybody's going to get gassed in
39 minutes
in an NBA game. Anything else for us, Nick? We've got a couple other callers in line here, but, you know, anything else you got for us tonight on this game?
Yeah, just real quick, I just wanted to say, I think that, you know, as much maligned as my man Evan Turner has been, I think that, you know, the past few games have kind of proven that he's found his role again, you know, again in the Celtics lineup. I think last year he kind of got put in that starting point, you know, that starting point role, and he wasn't really quite ready until the end of the season. And then now his role changed again because his role consistently changes. And I think with that you're seeing elevated play from Kelly Olynyk, because if you look at statistics where they're in the lineup together, the statistics bear it out, but so does the eye test, where Evan Turner, unlike Isaiah, who looks for his, you know, his own shot first, which is good. You want Isaiah to do that. I think Evan Turner looks quite frequently for other players first before he looks for his own shot. And Kelly, I think he really looks for. And when he plays with Kelly, I think he really gets, you know, I think that maximizes both of them. He gets a lot of assists to Kelly, you know, sitting out on the perimeter. And I think the two of them play well together. I think this is – you know, for the first time we can say that, you know, the starting lineup is what it should be in the second unit is, you know, just as good. They're both playing well, and I think that's how we're finishing games, because now both units are playing the way that they should be.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, Umani E.T. had 14 points tonight, 7 of 11 from the field in his 30 minutes, also had 6 rebounds and 4 assists. And he hit some big shots down the stretch there when Denver was coming back in this game. So, you know, certainly his role is becoming more cemented, becoming more defined. And I think the rotations that a couple of the guys were complaining about a few weeks ago are starting to become a little bit more solid. Obviously, Marcus Smart coming back a few weeks ago from his injury, is a big help, and you can actually get guys out there. David Lee getting the DNP coach's decisions a number of times certainly helps, because you don't have him clogging up your rotation. Tyler Zeller obviously hasn't been getting much time either, but that 4 minutes that he played tonight isn't gonna kill anybody. But you know, you got guys like Jurebko in Olenek. Like,
you know, David Lee wants that 4 minutes, though. David Lee was looking at that 4 minutes like, dang, how did Tyler Zeller get my 4 minutes?
Yeah,
David Lee, the highest paid cheerleader on the team, he's sitting there at the end of the bench. I want those 4 minutes.
Well, my feeling is now, I mean, you got to play him a little bit if you're going to be chopping him. People want to see him play, so.
True.
All right, anything else, Nick, before I let you go?
No, get the other callers. If you got callers lined up, get to them. I want to hear what they have to say.
Absolutely. All right, Nick Sesento down in Tampa. Thanks for the insight as always, and the gentle ribbing for the lack of technology going on in the Backe virtual studio tonight.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, man. Nick Sesento, always. Bringing the good stuff, and you'll hear more of him on the CLNS Radio Celtics post-game show as we go forward. He's going to be actually contributing as an annual analyst on some shows coming up in February, so stay tuned for that. Obviously bringing unique insight into the Celtics here. So still having a bit of technical issues here, so I'm going to be going at this a little bit on the fly here and a little bit mobily instead of using the laptop that seems to be failing me. But, again, the Celtics win this one 111-103 over the Denver Nuggets tonight at the TD Garden. And speaking of the TD Garden, Jared Weiss will be calling in with the Grandstand app Celtics locker room report coming up in a little while here. I'll be expecting the text message from Mr. Weiss very soon here, and he'll be letting me know that he's coming on to give us his insights straight from the TD Garden. And again, the call lines are open, the FanDuel toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771. We'll be going back to these call lines here. Let's see if we can bring in the 781 here. And, of course, the studio is frozen up on me, so we'll see if we can fix that in a minute and bring on our callers here. Again, 347-215-7771. We'll get back to the call lines in a second here as we try and figure out this issue here. But the Celtics again, 111-103 winners over Denver Nuggets. As I said to kick off the show, the Celtics are on a 4-game winning streak now. They've now won 7. Of the last 9 games going in. Going into tonight's game, they had moved up to the 5th position in the East and looking to make a move, as some of the teams above them are only a couple of games ahead of them. So with the win tonight, and you know, we'll check the scores on some of the other games around the league to see where they're going to be at. Celtics could move up even a little bit more here. So you got the Clippers and Hawks. Obviously, that Hawks game, the Hawks lose tonight, so that's going to help the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, with Atlanta just a game and a half ahead of the Celtics, and the Chicago Bulls only a half game ahead. And I'm not sure if these standings are up to date. I know the scores are up to date, and we'll look at some of the other scores as they come in as well. 76ers lose again, so not that we're worried about them too much. Although it would help if they lost a few more games and or won a few more games, and the Nets lost a few more games and help out the Celtics with that number one pick. Okay, still waiting for the studio to come back live here so I can get to the call lines again. 347-215-7771. We'll try and get back to your calls here and talk about this one, because I know I'm already sick of hearing myself talk. So, let's see if we can get this going here.
Sorry about that, folks. We are
back on the air here. Let's see if we can get the show back going again. We're having some technical difficulties with the studio here, so we're trying to get these cleared up a little bit so we can continue the show. We are going to have a call from Jared Weiss with the Grandstand app Celtics Locker Room Report coming up in probably about 10, 15 minutes or so. So hopefully we'll be able to get him on. Matt Rury is going to be calling in as well to give us his insight directly from the TD Garden as well as he heads home from the game tonight. So, again, give us a call on the FanDuel call line, 347-215-7771. We'll see if we can go to the call lines now. We have the 781. I believe this is Catherine. Catherine, are you with us on the CLNS Radio Celtics Post Game Show?
Yes, I am.
Wow, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for your patience, and obviously a few issues tonight. But what do you got for us tonight on the Celtics issue?
I love the game. I just thought they missed so many threes, the shots of threes.
Yeah.
But they played great defense, good rebounds, and that's it.
Good, yeah. But I mean, obviously the way the Celtics, the way they run their offense, they're living by the three. And of course, they could die by the three as well. Tonight, they were able to live by it, and you hear Tommy on the broadcast talk about how he wants them to go to the hoop more, especially at the end of the game, get to the line.
That's what I love to see more, like them go more to the hoop and like shooting twos.
Well,
like to see.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you on that. I agree. I've talked about it numerous times on this show that I'd love to see them not shoot as many threes. But for the most part, they're shooting uncontested shots. They're open shots when they take them. But if they get into a stretch where they're not hitting threes, their resolution to that is to keep shooting them and. Like you, I'd much rather see them keep going to the hoop and get into the line. Obviously, we see Isaiah Thomas doing that quite a bit, although he's one of those habitual shooters of the three. And, we get guys like Jay Crowder who got some size to that, him who can go to the hoop quite a bit. But, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. Anything else you got for us on tonight's game, Catherine?
I'd just like to say that Jay Crowder, I love the way he plays. He knows how to shoot threes, and he also goes to the hoop.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Now, I'd just like to give a shout out to Isaiah Thomas. He's my favorite player, as well as Jay Crowder. My favorite player.
Yeah, hopefully,
as well.
Hopefully Isaiah Thomas gets some good news tomorrow, and he'll be on the All Star team. I think that would be great for him and for
the
Celtics.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, with Jay Crowder though, since he was traded here last year from Dallas. He's kind of been an unsung hero on this team. You know, I mean, when the trade was made, I didn't even know who he was. I certainly know who he is now. Like you said, he can hit the outside shot. He can, you know, he can go to the hoop. But I think, you know, the other intangibles that he brings is what makes him so special to this team, diving for loose balls and getting his hands in the passing lane. So, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Those two guys, I love IT and Jay Crowder, you know, they definitely are those guys that are going to make this team tick, even when, you know, big moves are likely to be made by Danny Ainge. I mean, these two guys are going to be key to the Celtics down the stretch and try to get to the playoffs. Catherine, I appreciate the call, you know, keep calling into our Celtics post-game shows. I promise they won't have as many issues as we've had tonight, so you'll be able to get on the air a little bit sooner.
I sure will.
Okay, thank you so much.
And I'll be going.
Okay, we're going to go back to the call-ins here. I see my buddy Matt Rurry is going to come in and hopefully save me on his way home from the game. Matt, you know, you're the voice of the post-game show here, so I need your voice because I've had nothing but issues kicking off this show. So,
well, you know what, Sean? There's nothing but issues as far as BTR is concerned, right? That's just the way it rolls around here, and we just got to fight through it. And
I'm fighting.
It is what it is.
I'm fighting the good
right?
fight. I'm fighting the good fight tonight. Yeah. So you were at the game, correct?
I was at the game. I'm almost home right now, and then my connection will be better than what it sounds like right now on the phone.
It sounds pretty good to me right now.
Well,
that's pretty good.
That's fine then. Fair enough. But listen, I saw the. Kind of a tale of two halves tonight, even though the Celtics played pretty well throughout the entire game. I'm not trying to imply anything like that, but Kenneth Faried really went off in the second half for Denver, and I don't know if you want to attribute that to the fact that the score was way out of hand for the most part, or that he maybe turned it on at halftime, but just a little bit big picture, that's something like that still concerns me, that a guy like that can just go off and dominate the Celtics. And it's something that we've seen in the past with athletic force. The Celtics don't have really anybody that can stay with a guy like that. So I guess my point with bringing that up first is that, yeah, the Celtics played a great game, but there were definitely inconsistencies between the first half and the second half. That was one of them. Avery Bradley not really scoring much in the second half was another. And I don't know, it was a nice win, and the crowd did get going a couple times on some nice plays, especially by Evan Turner there towards the end of the game. But I think there are still some things to be concerned about coming out of this game.
Yeah, and you know, the whole kind of second half or fourth quarter collapse that we've seen from them a few times, I'm glad they were able to avoid that completely tonight, because they had – a 22-point lead early in the fourth quarter or late in the third quarter. You know, I was expecting the possibility of Geno time, and I actually texted Weiss and said, hey, you know, how about some Geno time tonight? And then, of course, Denver started coming back right after
that. That's when they went on the run. Yeah, of course.
I'm having a bad night all around.
Well, I mean, Coach Stevens had to call a couple timeouts in spots that he didn't want to call them, I think, anyway, in the second half, because there were two 6-0 Denver runs, one to open the half and one when the Celtics were up 20, and they went on a 6-0 run to cut it to 14, I think it was, or maybe it was 18-12, whatever it happened to be. But Coach Stevens kind of saw the same thing that you were just alluding to, the fourth quarter collapse. It was about to start. It was happening. And
Faried was a big part of it. Faried had 15 rebounds, you know, a few of them on the offensive glass with some putbacks. Only had 15 points overall, but it seemed like most of that came in the second half when Denver was coming back. I mean, they got it down, you know, they got it down to 11 points after three, and then the Celtics kind of ramped it up again early in the fourth quarter, and then Denver went on another run, like you said, and they were right back in the game, and they were looking to push to single digits there towards the end before, you know, a couple fouls got the Celtics, you know, extended out to this 8-point victory that they had tonight. But Isaiah Thomas and I think Jay Crowder were, you know, went to the bench, and I think that I'm pretty sure that Brad Stevens wanted to keep them there with the lead that they had, and he ended up having to put them back in the game so they could keep scoring towards the end there. They kind of slowed down a little bit. I don't want to take away from the overall, you know, sort of good vibes from the game because they did win. They've won four in a row now. They've won 7 out of the last 9. They should beat this Denver team. They did beat this Denver team. And this should give them, you know, some good confidence going forward with some games that might be a little bit tougher than people think they are with two against Orlando, and then the Knicks coming up early next week. But, you know, other than that, there's some good bright spots here for the Celtics. Nick Sesento was on with me earlier alluding to rotation kind of tightening up a little bit, and, you know, certainly, you know, despite Avery Bradley's kind of first half, I don't even know what you call it, but the anomaly of him only being able to score in bunches in the first half, you know, aside from that, there's some good bright spots here. Kelly Olynyk is one of them. He had 9 points off the bench in the first half. And obviously there's the comparisons out there. I'm seeing the, you know, the polls on Twitter about him comparing him to Dirk. I think,
okay,
you know, that's a long way off. It's a long way off to start doing that. And I think, you know, he's kind of his own player. But 17 points, 7 rebounds, and 3 assists for Kelly Olynyk tonight. We're seeing more consistency out of him. He's starting to play well, at least from, you know, from the games that I've watched that I've seen him play in.
What are you seeing? I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here. I think as far as the Celtics are concerned, Kelly Olynyk is the most improved player on this team. I think that he's shown.
I couldn't agree more.
I think that he's, especially compared to last year, and even some strides over the first couple of months, he improved from November to now, quite significantly, if you ask me. I think that he's done a great job. And Sean Grandy keeps throwing this one out there. Kelly Olynyk, since Thanksgiving, number 2 3-point shooter in the league percentage-wise. And
yeah,
he's right behind J.J. Redick. Can you believe that?
Around 38% overall.
And people keep leaving him open.
Yeah, exactly. That top of the key 3-pointer that he has, I mean, that's money for him. He's hitting that with regularity. And I think, you know, he only played 17 minutes tonight. So I think that's good for him. You know, he's coming off the bench again. You know, he has been in that starting role a little bit, depending on, I think, matchups and kind of how Brad Stevens was feeling that night. But, you know, this has been a good role for him to kind of get into, and he's contributing. And the thing with him, Matt, that I've seen more improvement on, even that his offense, is his defense. You know, he's not a great defender, and, you know, I don't know if he ever will be, but you can tell that he's working at it. He's getting his hands in his passing lane. He's doing his best, you know, oftentimes guarding guys that are bigger than him. You know, still a ton of room for improvement with him, but I think it's something that you can tell he's working on, and he's steadily getting a little bit better on the defensive end as well, which has been a big help.
Yeah, I mean, he has definitely improved on the defensive end. Just the other night against Washington, he took a charge, right? And that's something that you don't see very often from him. His feet are slow. They still are slow. That's the one big criticism I've had of him his entire career, his entire short career in the NBA, I should say, is that his feet are slow. But you're right, Sean. He's even improved on that side of the court and on that end of the floor, whichever cliche you want to use about the other end. Kelly Olynyk has definitely improved, and he's a better player than I expected him to be this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, you know, on the Denver side, Gallinari, you know, lit it up tonight, 23 points, you know, kind of kept Denver in the game for a while. I think that we did some other good contributions from Harris and was it Moutier, the rookie there? He had 13 points. Yeah. I mean, Barton off the bench, you know, 23 points for him. So, you know, although the Celtics were able to hold him off, There's some decent young talent with Denver. You know, you were at the game. What did you see from them that you like?
Well, I mean, Fareed was the big one for me, and he didn't have a good first half. He definitely stepped it up in the second half. It seemed like he had a double-double in the second half alone, which I can't confirm, but it definitely seemed that way because he stepped it up. But Danilo Gallinari actually played better tonight than I have ever seen him as far as, I mean, I've probably only seen him in, 10 or 15 games over the course of his career, which is not a lot compared to a lot of other guys in the league that I've been watching. But he was excellent. And if the rumors about the Celtics being interested in him again, as they have been over the past few years, are true, then after a performance like tonight, I wouldn't be opposed to it like I may have been in the past, because he was going to the hoop. He had an aggressive demeanor, and I think that's something that I've never seen from him before. And if that's the way that he's been playing more recently, then that's fine with me. Bring him on.
Yeah, Heinsohn even alluded to it, that he thought he bulked up a little bit, I think. So maybe that's helped him. And, you know, he's had some knee issues in the past, I know. But, you know, there's no doubt that he's a good scorer. He can hit the outside shot. Me personally, I don't care for him all that much. I think he's, you know, redundant on this team. I don't know, you know, I think, you know, if you're putting him in this lineup, you're taking away something somewhere from somebody else. Maybe it's on the defensive end, you know, maybe, you know, if you're taking away minutes from Crowder or from Olenek or, you know, somebody like that
right.
You know, that you might be, you might be stunting some growth from Olenek, or you might be taking away some of the passion that you're seeing from Crowder out there. If Gallinari's the one that's going to be your scorer, but you know, if you can get him for cheap and maybe he's a compliment to other pieces that you bring in at the deadline, then obviously you can utilize somebody like him, I think. But certainly from a scoring standpoint. I haven't been a huge fan of him.
Since we're talking about it, trade deadline type of things, why don't we get into this a little bit? Because I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
Calvin and I have talked about this. Calvin, if you're listening, I hope you're feeling better. I hope everything's fine with you. I'm not really sure what's going on. He was supposed to join you tonight, Sean, but something came up. He said he wasn't feeling well. Either way, Calvin, if you're listening, hope you're feeling better, bud. But he and I have talked about this as far as if you're going to trade the Nets pick or whatever combination of picks that you want to throw out there, what are you looking for in return? And my answer has always been, I want a scoring small forward. I want a guy like Rudy Gay or Gordon Hayward, for that matter. His name has been thrown around recently.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Somebody of that caliber that can take over at the end of a game, and he's not 5'9 like Isaiah Thomas. No offense, Isaiah. You're an excellent player. You should be an all-star. But I want a guy who's a small forward to power forward range, like a 6'6 to 6'8 type of guy that can score at will. And I know that's not easy to find, but I think that they're out there, especially if you're throwing this Brooklyn pick in the mix, because this year, who knows? That could be Ben Simmons.
Could be. It could be. And the way the Nets are playing, you know, they won't get all the ping pong balls, but they'll get a good amount of them that could give the Celtics a chance to get that pick, or whoever, you know, the Celtics trade that pick to. I've had this conversation as well. I've had this conversation when I posted the post game. Talked to Shar about it. I think Calvin about it even a couple times. I'm interested to see who Danny Ainge really covets. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins has been the kind of the binky that everyone has said that he wants to go after. You know, other than that, you know, who's even out there? You know, who's the guy? You know, you mentioned Rudy Gay. You know, obviously, if it's Rudy Gay 2 or 3 years ago, I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I might be a little bit hesitant now. Although he still can, you know, have his nights where he lights it up. I need somebody that's going to be impactful, and that's not going to be streaky and that's still coming into his prime or is already there. You know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, or you know, if you think otherwise, but I think you know, Rudy Gay might be a guy that's a little bit past it. He's, you know, he's not that old, but
yeah, he might be a little bit past his prime. But I also feel like he is the type of guy that, while he's not suited to be a number one, I think if he has a 1A with him, like Isaiah Thomas would be in this case,
yeah,
then he would be a lot better than maybe we saw him in Toronto as the number one scorer, or as we're seeing him now as basically the second scoring option, but the third option as far as having the ball in your hands is concerned. You're looking at Rondo and Cousins as the guys that control the ball on that team. He's really the third option. I think if he got back to being able to be a primary option, 1 or 1A, well, I don't think that he should be the number one option on a championship type of team. I think if he had another guy that was similar to him, like I said, like Isaiah Thomas, that he would be fine.
Yeah, it's possible. And I, you know, here's another thing. I don't know that I would necessarily give up that Mets pick for Rudy Gay. You'd have to sweeten the pot a little bit, I think.
Okay.
If you're, you know, if you're Danny Ainge, that's probably not going to get it done for you. But also, you know, I agree with you. I think a wing scorer is going to be a huge need for the Celtics going forward. But, you know, my question remains is who's out there? Because I want somebody that's going to be impactful. I want somebody that's going to score 20, 25 points a game, night in, night out. You know, it's going to have Isaiah Thomas as his wingman. You know, it's going to have guys like Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart there with him as well. So this, you know, we need somebody that's going to mesh well with them, you know. So I mean, I don't know who else is out there. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Yeah, you know what the problem is
that's going to be that guy.
Yeah, you're right. The problem is that there really aren't that many scorers out there exactly. That are of that caliber, because those if you have a guy like that, you're not looking to trade him. I mean, really. And
right.
Especially if you're looking at the small forward position, scorers don't really come from that position anymore. I'm just sort of looking at a list right now. There's a good amount of players that you could consider to be small forwards that are scoring at the top of the league right now. Like Kevin Durant, obviously, small forward. LeBron James, debatable at times. Paul George is a small forward. That's an obvious one as well. But like Jimmy Butler, he plays a lot of two guard. DeMar DeRozan is another good scorer. He plays a lot of two guard. Carmelo Anthony, more of a small forward, sure. But when you go down this line, Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Gordon Hayward, all these guys could be considered shooting guards. So the scoring punch doesn't come from that middle player, that three spot, as much as it used to, and especially as much as we're used to with Paul Pierce being here for so long. Maybe that's what
we
I'm thinking
spoiled.
About, and maybe I should back off a little bit.
I'm, you know what? I was just thinking that same thing about a minute ago. I'm thinking we need Paul Pierce, like, a la, you know, championship era 2008. And that's what the Celtics need this year. And it's not there. I mean, because, you know, although there's been some rumors, and they're probably mostly unfounded rumors, that you know, the Thunder would trade Kevin Durant before he goes to free agency,
I don't think so.
That likely. So there's the guy that's out.
But like of all the players that I just named, none of them are available, right? I guess Carmelo Anthony is probably the most available of all those players. And why would the Knicks trade him for a bag of ball?
Hayward,
you know?
You don't consider Hayward to be available?
Well, maybe Hayward's available. Sure,
he might be the only one of that bunch that's most available. Because think of it this way. Look at those other teams that you mentioned in their position in the standings, right? Especially in the Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference is jammed. You look at, you know, obviously Cleveland's up there. Toronto's starting to separate themselves a little bit. And then you've got Atlanta that's only, you know, a game and a half, two games ahead of the Celtics, who are fifth. And everybody's bunched up basically between 3 and 8 and even, you know, down to 9 and 10.
Right.
So, you know, teams that are still in the hunt, they may not necessarily be sellers in the next month. I think that, you know, the next couple of weeks here, especially in the Eastern Conference, is going to determine a lot about who might be available. You know, I mean, Atlanta's talking about Jeff Teague being available or Al Horford being available. Atlanta's still in the hunt, so that's kind of strange to hear. You would think they'd want. I understand Teague a little bit, and they alluded to this on the broadcast tonight that they want to make room for Schroeder. That's fine, but Al Horford, I would think, would be a good piece for them if they think they're going to go anywhere in the playoffs this year. That they would need somebody like him. Who are they looking for to give up for somebody like that? And again, there's another guy past his prime that, you know, if it was 2 or 3 years ago, it would take him in a heartbeat for that one pick.
Right.
But that's the thing. I want somebody that's going to be worthy of that, and there are not too many players that I feel that are.
Yeah, you never know at this point, I guess, maybe. As far as the pick is concerned. If you're going to actually take a player from college, you don't know if they're going to turn out, especially if it's not Ben Simmons or Ingram. I guess, but
yeah. So you're taking a chance either way, right? I mean, you're taking a chance either way. If you wait it out, and you don't trade the pick, and you use the pick, it could end up being anywhere from, you know, anywhere in that lottery, right? They could end up getting the 10th or 11th pick out of that, and then it's kind of a failure almost.
Well, I think you're right, though. This is going to be really interesting going down the stretch, especially in the Eastern Conference, because if there are going to be any trades that are made, who considers themselves a buyer? And if you are in the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference, like the Celtics could be, like Orlando could be, who knows, in a couple of weeks, maybe they'll be up there, like Indiana kind of is at this point, who are you targeting and what are you looking for? Do you really think that you can go out and get a player that's going to push you over the top to get you past Cleveland and into the finals? Do you really think that you can make a deal like that at this point, or are you going to be content as a middle of the pack team to let your roster play it out and look forward to the following year? I'm not sure, but there are going to be a good 5 or 6 teams that are in that boat.
Yeah, I think it was Warren Shaw that I was on a couple weeks ago, and we had that very conversation. It almost behooves the Celtics and some other teams that are kind of in that 4 to 8 range in the Eastern Conference to wait it out, right? Because they're kind of all bunched up. Nobody's really taken that much control over the top positions in the Eastern Conference. So why be brash and make a move right now when, you know, you may not have to. You're going to get a good position in the playoffs, and obviously you're going to have to battle Cleveland at some point, you would expect, but at this point you can kind of wait it out and see what happens and see what happens with the other teams. You know, the Celtics have their next 3 games are all teams in their conference. That's going to go a long way to determine where they're at in the next, you know, next week or so. If they can win 2 out of 3 of those games, or, you know, if they kind of falter a little bit, that's gonna go a long way. But these next couple of weeks are going to be interesting because, you know, come February is the big push here to see what position you're going to be in at the end of the month when that deadline comes around to see if you are a buyer or a seller. Now, you mentioned, Matt, that you want a score. You want that winning score or like we said, you know, that two guard that's going to be the big score there. But if there's nobody really out there that is worthy of that Nets pick or worthy of some players on this roster or other assets that Danny Ainge has at his disposal, what's the next tier? I mean, is it the big man? Is it the 5? You know, is it the Cousins or the Marc Gasols or somebody of that ilk to are they worthy of that? And is that something you pull the trigger on?
Yeah, as much as I would love a wing scorer and a guy that's going to close things down at the end of the game, a la Paul Pierce, I think if they could find a way to pry Marc Gasol out of Memphis, that's the ultimate move for me anyway. I'm a big Marc Gasol fan, and I think that he would transform this team into a contender, especially in the Eastern Conference. Cousins, I'm not as sold on. I love his talent, but I kind of take the Mike Gorman route here, and sort of say that his attitude is the thing that I'm worried about, and I'm not so sure that his locker room presence is what you want around here. But if you could get some sort of assurance, which is almost impossible with that guy, that he's going to behave and that he's not going to cause any trouble, then he would be a target as well, ahead of a scoring guard or forward, like I mentioned. But ultimately, Sean, after that, I don't really think there's anything else that I would want the Celtics to do. I'd rather just have them keep the pick and go that route.
It could, or make some, you know, make some secondary moves that don't involve that Nets pick, you know, where they could make improvements, or, you know, fill in some gaps where they may have some. You know, obviously this team has been resilient in some games and wildly inconsistent in others, and, you know, they're winning games they shouldn't win and losing games they should win. So, you know, I'd love to see them be more consistent. And, of course, in the last 9 games or so, they have been for the most part. You know, there's spurts within games that they could still work on. And I know Brad Stevens is probably pulling his hair out at some of the, you know, some of those areas within games that they need improvement on. And tonight was one of them. But, you know, I mean, this team's in a good spot right now. I said at the opening of the show, I don't know if anybody heard it, but I said at the opening of the show that, you know, if you jump off this bandwagon, now's the time to get back on because this team is making a move.
Plenty of seats.
What's that?
Plenty of seats. Plenty of seats.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, plenty of seats.
There are seats in the garden, too, by the way. People should use the Tick IQ app to go get some seats. How about that? Boom.
Absolutely. And you can win tickets to go see the Celtics face Paul Pierce and the LA Clippers. Might be the last time we see Paul Pierce play in a game in Boston. So we're going to go back to the call lines here because I see that our man Jared Weiss is calling in from the TD
Excellent.
Garden with the Grandstand app Celtics locker room report. And Jared Weiss, welcome into the show this evening. How's it going down there at the TD Garden tonight?
Doing good, doing good. Celtics can't stop winning. It's starting to get concerning.
Concerning.
I jinxed the Geno time, though. I already talked to Matt about this. I jinxed the Geno time. I was really hoping that we were going to see it tonight, and then as soon as I called it out, the Nuggets went on a run, and it was all over from there.
Well, isn't that a compliment that the basketball gods are reading our Twitter feeds?
Exactly, yes, yes. I was rather impressed with that. But, yeah, so a good win for the Celtics tonight. They got off to a good start, and despite the fact that Denver hung around, you know, they were able to to withstand that tonight and not have that fourth quarter or that second half collapse. Brad Stevens had some concerning moments on the bench over there. You know, any thoughts from him in particular after this game? I mean, obviously a good win for the Celtics, but, you know, anything from Brad and his presser after the game?
Yeah, he was asked about that 18-1 run that they went on, and he responded to it by saying, that run was enough to give a cushion, but looking back, it looked like for a little bit that it wasn't going to be enough because they were so sloppy with the ball towards the end. He talked about how when you watch Denver on film, they're a team that makes big runs. They're up, he said, like in the Indiana game a few days ago, they were up 15 in the second, and they're down 10, then they're down 8, and then they end up winning the game. It's kind of a mess for them. So they are a team that goes on runs. The Celtics are also a team that goes on runs. They specialize in it. But he said that they got to tighten up their defense when teams are in need three situations, when they're going to be shooting a lot of threes because they got to dig themselves out of a hole or it's late in the game and they need threes at that point. And the Celtics are bad at guarding the three-point line in those situations, which is an ironic thing to say because the Celtics have generally, over the last 2 years under Stevens, been one of the best teams in opponent three-point field goal percentage. They're towards the top of the league in those rankings. But I guess Stevens doesn't care. You know, Stevens doesn't necessarily care about stats, and I'll explain that by telling you the question that I asked him, which I actually got the answer I was hoping for, which was, so I had a stat tonight that the Celtics had their fifth 15-steal game this season, which is the first time that the Celtics have done that since the 2004 season, since the 2003-04 season. And they did it 6 times that year. The Celtics have done it 5 times this year, and we're still in January. So
yeah,
it's safe to say that they're probably gonna tie that mark, if not surpass it. And if you think that, oh, this is going to be a record, I looked back in like in 99, 2000, I think it was, they had like 20 of them. So they're not breaking any ground here, but it's definitely in the contemporary NBA a pretty significant performance for them. And so I asked Stevens, when you see your team getting that many steals, what does that do for you? And what he said was, I want to quote him directly here on that one. goddamn, where'd he go? He said, I don't even pay attention to the steals, to be honest with you. It means nothing. All it means is that they're in good position. But when they yep. start gambling and taking themselves out of position, it's just not worth it. And those feeble attempts get you beat, and the Celtics had a couple of those tonight they got scored on. And so he did say that it's kind of worth it at the beginning of the game to maybe get a little bit more aggressive, but it's all about being in the right place, being in the right spot, and then being active with your hands when the ball gets into that area. And, you know, we know Marcus Smart does that very well, but there are guys on the team that sometimes, like Jay Crowder, that they get a lot of their steals diving out to wing passes, and sometimes they don't get it, and then that opens up a, you know, five on, or really a 4-on-3 driving opportunity for the defense. So with Stevens, the steals are nice, but it, he actually, when I said that stat, he cut off my question to go, sweet. So that was a funny moment. But the,
you know,
you could look at the high steal numbers and be excited by them, but it may, there's going to be some nights where they have high steal numbers and they don't even play good defense.
That's a great point by Stevens, Jared. And I think that Bradley's one of those guys as well. He used to be a lot
yep.
more of a gambler, especially under Doc Rivers. He was definitely trying to jump passing lanes, and I think that he's actually been a little bit better defensively when he stays in his spot and he gets in the lane that way and they stand their ground. I like what I've seen from Bradley, especially recently on the defensive end.
And, you know, part of that is that he gets to stay at home because he has Marcus Smart and Jay Crowder doing all
right.
that for him, so he doesn't have to do it.
What's your take on Bradley, Jared? I mean, we talked about this, obviously. It's a little bit of a trend now where he gets off to these hot starts, and he had 21 points in the first half tonight. But a little drop-off in the second half where he only had 6 points. You know, what's your take on Avery Bradley and this sort of trend that we see him in where he's getting off, particularly in the first quarter, off the hot starts and then tailing off quite a bit after that?
Yeah, so his career high for threes made in a game, 7, which he had earlier this year, and then tonight he had 5 in the first half, so we're like, uh-oh, watch out, he's going to break it. And then he went 0-for-4 in the second half of downtown. I think he airballed the last one that he took, which was a wide-open corner 3 in the left corner. So, yeah, I mean, Avery's a guy that tends to get off the hot starts. He was actually asked about, Stevens was asked about that after the game, and Stevens said that he thought that Avery did a good job today making some great plays off the dribble, but he goes through that mini slump that every shooter has one time or another. And you know, and that's something that Bradley, I think, really went through over a couple weeks. But Steven says that pretty much whenever a shooter goes through those slumps, that means you're going to have a flurry of makes at some point in a night or two. And, you know, tonight was one of those nights, but then he kind of regresses back into that slump. And, I mean, he was making some great shots in the first half.
Yeah.
He just had – it wasn't like he was hitting a bunch of wide-open threes. I mean, he had some good contested shots. He had a couple step-backs. He had that one play, which will be our grand slam play of the game in the Garden Report, which was he did like 3 crossovers at the top of the key, got himself a little bit of position, and then drove to the rim and made a great play. And it was a very un-Avery Bradley-like play, since you don't really see him taking guys off the dribble one-on-one very often. But he was just in that flow that he just lost it when he got cold at halftime and then came out in the second half without it. So, I mean, he still ended up with 27 points, right? So I mean,
yeah.
he still
yeah.
had a good night overall.
Yeah, and I think it was 11 of 20 shooting overall for him. He played 39 minutes. I thought he, you know, he probably got a little bit tired because of the aggressiveness of how he was playing on defense. You know, and of course, 39 minutes will take a toll on anyone. Another key contributor tonight was Kelly Olynyk. We're seeing more and more consistency out of him. Obviously, the three-pointer is really come around for him. That he's, you know, not including tonight's stats, but was around 38% from three-point line for the season, which is right up there, you know, with some of the top shooters in the league at this point. What are you seeing from Kelly Olynyk, or what was said from Kelly or about Kelly from tonight's game and his contribution down there?
Steven said that he read somewhere, and I think I might have asked Kelly this question, that he's starting to find his shots better or spots better, and he's starting to understand where all his spots are coming from, which is something that Kelly had said. And Steven said that he thinks it's probably true, and it's an experience thing, but they need that having him being aggressive is really good for the team, and that he's kind of the thing is so there. Basically, what Steven said was, he said that they've chosen to play with a lot of skill on the floor, And what he's saying by skill on the floor is basically that they're going smaller and they're going with guys that they're relying on to be snappy passers, good shooters, most importantly. And what he said was the skill is only a threat if you actually use it, which is to say that Kelly is a major threat as a three-point shooter. In the beginning of the season, he was not hitting any of those threes, and therefore it wasn't working. Now that he is the second hottest shooter in the NBA right now behind J.J. Redick, he's a major threat, and he's really terrorizing offenses. Just because, like Stevens, what Stevens was explaining, is that in the second half, a lot of the second half, they would put Jarebko at the four and Olynyk at the five, and that would forces guys like Nurkic and Jokic to go play out on the perimeter having to guard Olynyk, because Olynyk is such an effective three-point shooter. So being able to have him at the five is really crucial to opening things up for guys like Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley.
All right, Jared, we appreciate it, sir. I know that you're not going to be attending the game on Friday, so happy anniversary. And I will be the post-game show host on that one, so we'll talk to whoever's replacing you, sir, in the locker room that night. Thank you very much.
Sir, that'll be Corey Prescott from CLNS.
Excellent.
Perfect. Perfect. That'll be awesome. Yeah, Jared, real quick, because we know you got to run, but what should we expect from the Garden Report when we wake up tomorrow morning?
The Garden Report, I'm going to be having on, you're not going to believe this, Eric Weiss, who is not related to me. he's a contributor to the Celtics blog. He created this analysis service called Sports Attitude, which does psychological impressions of basketball prospects, and he's used throughout the entire NBA. He does this for all sorts of college teams across the country. He's a very valuable scouting resource, and we're going to have him on the show because I've been wanting to have him on the show forever, and he stayed late enough tonight that I can bring him on. So I'm going to sit down with Eric, and we're going to do some player profiles on the Celtics and see what he thinks of them, and maybe some other players from around the league, and then we'll also take a look at tonight's game, obviously, really looking at Avery's first half and the way that they defended in the first half.
All right. Well, Jared, we'll let you get
sounds
back
fun.
To it. Follow Jared on Twitter at @CLNS_JaredWeiss. And, of course, go to youtube.com/CLNSradio to catch the Garden Report. And, of course, the Grandstand app, Celtics Locker Room Report. He mentioned the Grandstand app play of the game, Avery Bradley down there. But Grandstand, sports highlights from fans in the stands on the new sports app, Grandstand. You can share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download the Grandstand app on the App Store today or at grandstand.me. Jared Weiss, doing some work down there at the TD Garden, and it'll be interesting to hear his interview with Eric Weiss. I believe he said it was Sports Attitude. So it'll be interesting to hear the profiles of the players there. Matt, we've got about 10 minutes left in this one here. I feel that we've turned it around a little bit. We're finishing the show strong.
Yeah,
We'll continue to do that. Obviously, a stretch coming up, as I mentioned earlier, that Celtics have back-to-back, home-and-home games against the Orlando Magic. I did text my sister the other day and told her, and she lives down in Orlando, I told her she needs to take my nephew to the game on Sunday.
Very
so
nice.
If you're listening, Sunday at 6, take them to the game. And then they have the Knicks, who have been playing pretty well lately.
Whoever's doing the post-game show on Sunday, I'll double-check this right now, should be aware that Nick Sesento is going to be going to the game in Orlando, or he's planning to.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm not sure how he handles himself at games, but I know that he gets a little riled up on the post-game show sometimes. So if you're hosting that show that night, be aware of the 941 number that's calling in. It is Nick Sesento, and he may have something salty to say. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
He was on point tonight, though. He was very professional earlier.
He's preparing himself. He's
yeah,
preparing himself
and
to be that co-host.
And ultimately, he saved me because I was still trying to get the studio to actually work.
You mentioned him earlier, and I meant to say that he's actually becoming Mr. Reliable. Between him and our new guy, Max Sandgrund, who I'm hosting with on Friday, these two guys have stepped up three or four times in the past couple of weeks already as first-timers here with the post-game show, Sean, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah. So where it was going, obviously, a stretch here where they have some games – that may be a little bit tougher than we hope they are. But what do you need to see from the Celtics to be able to go through these next, at least these next three games, where you have conference rivals, to put the good battle in against these teams and have a good outcome?
Yeah. So you know what, I just as far as Orlando's concerned, I just want the Celtics to show up, because I think Orlando has surprised a lot of people this year as far as fans are concerned, and they've certainly surprised a lot of teams because their record is better than anybody really that I heard of, myself included, thought it was going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've fallen off a little bit here. They've lost seven in a row, which is a major problem for that team. But for some reason, I still don't believe that they're that bad. I don't think they're the 20 and what would it have been 17 and then even before that the 19 and 13 team or 19 and 15 team that they were at that point. I don't believe they're that team either. But I also don't think they're a team that should be losing seven or eight games in a row. So I would just be worried that the Celtics on Friday night would show up flat against a team that's lost seven or eight in a row and then choke it away and lose one themselves. I want them to show up. I don't expect them to win both games against Orlando because, like I just said, I think Orlando is not the lose seven in a row type of team. So I feel like a split is a reasonable outcome. But the Celtics have to show up at home on Friday. That can't be the letdown game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these home games that they really need to nail those down. And I'm looking at the schedule here, and not only do they have two games against Orlando and then a game against the Knicks on Tuesday, but they play the back-to-back games because they have to play the Pistons. So I believe they're in New York on Tuesday, and then they come home to play the Pistons on Wednesday.
Right.
And the Pistons have been a pesky team. And are right there with the Celtics, similar records right now. We'll see what they look like a week from now. But some marginal games coming up.
What do you think about the Pistons? I would argue that they have more talent than the Celtics, and they're just not utilizing it as well.
Now that's a good point. From what I've seen from them, I mean, obviously, Drummond's a beast. I love that guy. Would love to see him in Celtics green. You got Jackson averaging 19 points a game, Caldwell Pope averaging 14, almost 15 points a game. Morris and Ellis Silver round out their starting lineup. They have a decent bench. So you can't sleep on this team. I think, they're one of those teams that are going to be hanging around, and they may be in a position where they're buyers at the deadline, which I don't think a lot of people would have said. Greg Monroe goes to Milwaukee, so they lose a little bit there. But obviously Drummond was going to be the guy that was going to step up, and he has for sure. Here's a team that's fighting it out in the Eastern Conference, and like we talked about with that, with them all bunched up between really three and maybe nine or ten in the Eastern Conference, everybody's got a shot, and Detroit is one of them right now. And if they keep playing like this, certainly they're going to be in contention for a playoff spot in the East, and likely one that's not just in sliding in with an 8 seed, but possibly 7-6, even as high as 5, if they keep playing this way. So the Celtics are going to have a tough matchup against them next Wednesday. And like I said, we'll see how they make out these next three games before then, because their records are very similar right now. So they're going to be flip flopping and going back and forth with Detroit. We'd like to keep them in the rearview mirror, but they're going to be hanging around.
Yeah, I'll tell you, if there was a scenario where the Celtics and Detroit were 4-5, and Detroit had that home advantage, they got the 4 seed for some reason, I would pick against the Celtics. I would go Detroit in that one because I just feel like they would be better at home, and the Celtics have a tough time playing there for whatever reason. They seem to struggle, and the matchups aren't great, and I would go with Detroit in 7 if that was the series, a 4-5 series with the Celtics on the road. I hate to say it,
well,
but that's how I feel.
I think the matchup that really gives Detroit the advantage is with Drummond at the 5. The Celtics really don't have anybody that can defend him. I mean, they could throw some looks at
him. That's why they foul him.
Throw some different – yeah, exactly. They put him at the free throw line.
And try to take him out of the game. And, I mean, sometimes it works, but that's when the rest of – Detroit needs to step up, and you saw it
in Boston. And they have those kind of players.
They did.
Yeah, they have. I mean, Reggie Jackson is you know, I mean, he's been a good fit for Detroit since he came over. Like I said, Caldwell Pope is playing pretty well as well. And you know, you can't sleep on Ilya Sova. I mean, that guy can hit the shot from the outside. And you know, so the, you know, just that starting lineup. That's, you know, that's the only thing we've really talked about is their starting lineup. Never mind, you know, they do have some decent pieces that come off the bench and help out as well. So
they do.
I
mean,
it's
Brandon Jennings.
That would be a very tough
hurt again, I guess.
Yeah. What's happening?
Jennings is hurt again, I think. Right, but
yeah,
Stanley Johnson is a solid young player, and he's a good defender, and even though he's a rookie, he's a guy that people are starting to talk about and around the league, and don't sleep on him either, because he made a difference in that game in Boston just a couple weeks ago.
He did. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'd be worried about. So yeah, Detroit's kind of a sleeper pick, I think, to sneak into one of those upper spots in the Eastern Conference if they keep playing like this. But of course, you know, health is going to be a factor. But if they could get Jennings back and he's, you know, playing to his capabilities, that there's another piece right there, you know, that's going to get them to, you know, pretty high position in the Eastern Conference. So Celtics have a tough week ahead, I think, tougher than you know, you look at the schedule in you know, somebody who isn't too in tune with the NBA or to the Celtics themselves might say that they should win all of these games, but they're not going to be easy at all. Because, like you said, before the Magic lost seven in a row, they were right there with the Celtics fighting for a spot in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference.
So I do need to correct myself. Jennings has been back for about 15 games now. That shows how much I've been paying attention to him coming off the bench. He is only playing about 15 or 16 minutes a game, and he did hit 20 points the other night in a loss against New Orleans, but he's basically been a non-factor scoring-wise. And he's been doing some other things with the ball. He's got a few assists here and there. So to wrap up that little Detroit discussion that we had there, correction, Jennings has been playing, just not very well yet.
We've got about 2 minutes left here, Matt. And before we wrap this up, I had a couple questions for you since I haven't been on the air with you in quite a while. Obviously, the Cleveland situation gets a little bit interesting with David Black getting fired and Tuan Liu coming on board. They were 30-11 at the time of the firing. You know, and now they announced today that Tuan Liu is going to be the coach of the Eastern Conference in the All-Star game. What's your take on that? I mean, there's rumors coming out now that LeBron wanted Spoelstra fired when he was in Miami, and, you know, so I mean, all this is coming out of the woodwork now.
Yeah, I'm not buying into that Spoelstra LeBron rumor, although I would love to, because that would just show that Pat Riley still has control and that he's not going to give in to a player, no matter who that player is. So while I hope that rumor is true, I don't believe it is. I think it came from a one-off Miami Heat investor who was giving his opinion, which is what he's come out and said. He's giving his opinion. So let's forget about that Spoelstra thing. I do believe, however, that David Blatt was the wrong decision and the wrong choice for Cleveland the entire time. I don't believe he ever should have been hired, and they should have just talked to LeBron in the first place. If Tyronn Lue was the guy that LeBron respected and they wanted him to be a part of the staff, which he has been for the past 2 years, then they should have just hired him in the first place. If they didn't think he was ready, then and you're hiring David Blatt as a figurehead, then I guess that sort of makes sense, but it's not very respectful to a guy that had a big name and a good career in Europe, and they should have just let him stay there instead of sullying his name by dragging him through the LeBron James mud. Obviously, LeBron James is the driving force behind a lot of decisions, Sean, and it's just too bad.
Well, we're going to wrap this one up here. Like I said, we finished stronger than we started, and I thank Matt Rory for jumping on with me on his way home from the game tonight, and, of course, for Nick Sacinto for calling in as well and saving me when I was trying to get the studio up and running properly. This episode was brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world. All of their self-help courses are taught by experts, and new courses are added each and every week. claim your free trial membership to lynda.com by going to lynda.com/CLNS. We are out of here. Yeah, we'll be back on Friday night. Matt, you'll be are you hosting Friday night, you said?
Yes, sir. Max Sandgrund, our newest host, and myself will be joining everybody after the Orlando game, and I'm looking forward to that one. We'll be hearing from Corey Prescott with the locker room report, and you know it. Hopefully they win that.
Absolutely. All right, don't forget to check out the Garden Report at youtube.com/CLNSradio in the morning. And, of course, as we just said, we'll be back on Friday night. So thank you for listening, and good night.